What's shaking, bacon? Welcome back to Screencast. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside a very, very big group of people right now. Up in the center, we've got the movie bros herself, Joey Noel.
Oh.
The big dog, Kevin Coelho. He only produces everything, Kevin Coelho.
What's up?
And then, of course, joining the show for the first time in a very long time, the second best baby blues in San Francisco, Forbes 30 Under 30, and a man who will forever be taller than me, Mr. Tim Geddes.
Feels good to be back. Can't wait to talk about all this with this group of people.
We have a very special show for you. Rounding out the group, of course, is the Hispanic heartthrob, clicking heads and sticking beds, Mr. Andy Cortez. God.
What does that mean?
Don't ask.
I was telling Kevin that the last time I was on the show, it was the infamous Greg Miller, Mr. Robot hacking the ATM machine episode. And it's been a while, and this is like a good triumphant return.
Well, we're very happy to have you guys. Of course, today we're doing a very special episode of the show, and going forward, we're going to change it just a little bit. We are actually going to kick off with a review of The Boys Season 2, Episodes 1 through 5. We've all been enjoying the show so much that Tim was like, why don't we just talk about it on Screencast? That seemed like a pretty good format for that. If we have a little time at the end of the show, we'll go into some news, but there's not much news anyway, and I doubt we will anyway. But next week, we're going to be moving forward episode by episode. So next week, the crew is going to come back, and we're going to talk about The Boys Season 2, Episode 6, and then the following week, Episode 7, and then the following 8. And then after that, I think it's done. So if you guys aren't clear on that format, today's 1 through 5, we are going to do spoiler-free impressions first, so you guys can get, if you're not familiar with The Boys, you can get a little taste for how we're feeling about it. Spoilers, I think we all love it. And then we're going to go episode by episode and talk a little bit more about the minutiae, and we'll get into spoilers. Before we do that, of course, I want to give a quick shout-out to our amazing Patreon producers, who it feels like they've been with us since we were born. Mohammed and Al, the Predator Tribesmen.
Momo Now. Thank you, Momo Now. Coming to Hulu Live.
Coming to Hulu Live soon.
Hulu Live.
Of course, a couple housekeeping things before we get into the show. This episode of Screencast is brought to you by Upstart, HelloFresh, and ExpressVPN. But we'll tell you about those amazing sponsors later. We're also brought to you by kindoffunny.com/store, where we got new merch, and it's dope. We can show that right there. I want this blue anime girl t-shirt so bad. And I've never said those words in my life. putting them all together, it's just coming out of my mouth. Sounds wrong, but the shirt looks so right. Andy, did you do this one? Did you design this one, or someone else did this one?
No, RT their designers kind of created that young woman.
Is she the same?
Because she was on the last one, too. Yeah.
I love these two. These two shirts are so fun. Of course, this is our collab with Funhouse. We get the blue hair, they get the orange hair, of course. And if you guys want to see more Funhouse in orange hair, you can go check out the KF Nug Dome. Andy and I did a special episode
that was
of KFA,
really good. That was really
where we
good.
Reviewed the Spicy Chicken McNugget, and James and Elise played Wendy's. So you guys can go check that out. And also, when you get to Greg's part, just shut it off. You don't need to submit your child or your psyche to that at all.
That's true.
Joey,
yes.
We also have some cool stuff on the Patreon Platinum tier. I think we finished with the Cyberpunk prints, correct?
This is the last month to get the final Cyberpunk prints.
You have 15 days, give or take a few days. I'm not quite sure what today is, to get the exclusive Panda Musk Cyberpunk Cross KF prints. When you have this game, when you guys are playing this game and you're thinking this could be game of the year, the thing that's going to tip it over the scales for you, Tim, is going to be whether or not your room is wallpapered with me and Kevin, with Kevin with that thonk-a-thonk, and me looking at that
God.
Thing. Just enjoying
God, Nick.
You know what I'm talking about?
I can smell those words.
He's in the Daisy Dukes, everybody. It's spicy. We're in spicy nugget territory now, everybody. But if you guys want to be supporters of the show, of course, or be a part of the show, you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Back at the $5 above tier gives you opportunities to write into the show, just like I believe Wisemark did today. He gave us some reviews of The Boys. Nope, it was Matt Bowers and Grant Burton. They both gave us some review of what they're thinking on season 2 of The Boys so far. And of course, if you want to get those sick, nasty cyberpunk prints, you want to wallpaper yourself with me and Kevin's donk-a-donk, then you can back us at the fan mail tier or above, and that'll get you those perks as well. All right, gentlemen.
Hold on, Nick, real quick.
Yeah.
I want to just reiterate some things to make it extremely clear.
Yeah.
So what's happening here is this episode, we're doing Boys 1 through 5 of season 2. Then the next couple of weeks, it's going to be season or episode 6 next week, episode 7 the following, 8, one by one by one. Then there'll be a couple like traditional screencasts in between. And then we're going into Mandalorian, baby. We're doing the same thing week to week. That's Mandalorian. Right. Right. Don't know the cast of that yet, but just want everyone to get hyped and have an understanding of if you want to have that water cooler moment after you watch your favorite hit shows this fall, boys, Mandalorian, Kind of Funny is where you want to be.
Spoilers, we have reached out to Carl Weathers to see if he wants to do 10 episodes of this show, and he has said no.
But so, next year, not even having to do with The Mandalorian. Yeah, just...
I mean, no, The Boys, he wants to see what Carl Weathers' thoughts are on
only
The Boys.
8 episodes, and we're only doing 4 on them.
Yeah. we keep going. Well, for Carl Weathers, we'd go episode by episode. Not for you guys. For you guys out there, you're not worth us going from episode 1. But for Carl Weathers, we would back to season 1, episode 1, and go from there. I'm just kidding. Kicking it off, The Boys, ladies and gentlemen. Amazon Prime series right now, created by Eric Kripke. I don't know how you say that guy's last name. Starring Carl Urban, of course. Jack Quaid, friend of the show. You guys can see his interview over on We Have Cool Friends right now. Greg and him got into it in a good way, not in a bad way. They didn't like scrap because I'm pretty sure Greg would cry. Anthony Starr and Aaron Moriarty are the leads in that. And, of course, joining season 2, who I think is one of the coolest characters, is Aya Cash, I think is how you say her name. Aya Cash as Stormfront. And man, oh man, do you start to hate this character very quickly. Of course, The Boys, based on a comic book by the same name by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson. It follows an epitomous group of vigilantes as they combat superpowered individuals who abuse their abilities.
Nick, hold on.
What's up?
I'm not going to let you keep going without saying Derek Robertson.
I apologize, Andy. Tim, I apologize. Joy, I apologize. Kevin, okay. I especially apologize to you and the donk. Based on a comic book of the same name by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, it follows the team of vigilantes as the combat superpowered individuals who abuse their abilities. The series premiered on July 26th, 2019. Ahead of the premiere, Amazon renewed The Boys for a second season, which premiered on September 4th, 2020, and is running episodes weekly. And of course, good news, a third season has in fact been ordered. Apparently, people are liking this show a lot. I want to kick it off, though. Has anyone read the comic book?
I was going to, and then I was like, you know what? I'll read it afterwards.
It's probably a smart idea.
Yeah.
I think I read the first book, and it's different. Yeah,
it's very different. But also,
I think in the comic book series, if I'm not mistaken, they fight other groups of not just the Seven. I think the Seven is like the overarching villain, but they've got other X-Men groups
and other different groups that are running around doing stuff.
Sorry, I cut you off there. What were you going to say? All right, cool. Going into let's do spoiler free right now. Oh, Kevin, I cut you off, Kevin.
Oh.
But like, I think we figured
kept
it
going
out.
And finished.
let's all hold hands. Tim, the other way. There it is.
Joe,
perfect.
Joe.
Let's get my arm through.
Just everyone grab Joey.
There it is. Let's kick it off with Andy. Andy, what are you thinking about The Boys season 2 so far? Spoiler free.
I would say the last episode, episode 5, is the one that I would say I like the least, because I feel like every episode in this whole series, season 1 as well, just hasn't missed. And you leave episode feeling, you leave every episode thinking, damn, like I care about everything that's happening, even though there's one of the plot points, the story arcs that is less important. I feel like it's still getting somewhere.
Right.
I think the show's just great. It's so self-aware. It's so funny that it knows what it wants to be. And I think they've nailed every aspect of it.
Joey, give us your thoughts. Spoiler free. If you spoil anything, Kevin's going to reach out and hold your hand.
It's so interesting that you liked the fifth one the least, because I think I like that one the most. I really like what they're doing with the deep storyline. I think it's very, very good. Just in terms of like what that would mean in current and like within celebrity culture now.
I
think it's great. Aya Cash killing it. This is my obligatory time to tell everybody that if you like her performance in this, you need to go watch She's the Worst, or You're the Worst, because she's 10 out of 10.
She's the worst. Holy shit.
You're the worst.
But no, but she's the worst. The worst is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So good casting.
Yeah. She's really great. I love it. Yeah. I'm excited to keep watching. It was fun to have like the first 3 episodes to binge, and now that we have to wait week to week, it's like a little bit torturous, but I'm excited.
Yeah, apparently people are having a big problem with that as well, Joe. You're not the only person that has an issue with that. But that hey, sucks, what are you
going
to do?
Like people going and review bombing this
and
stuff?
Tanking the review. Yeah. I know. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I know.
Come on. Boo like, you.
If Amazon wants to do this, it works. We're all coming back every week, super excited on Thursdays and Fridays.
I didn't know people were review bombing it. That's bullshit.
If you look at the reviews right now, they're at like 2.5 stars out of 5.
Fuck yourself, losers. You fucking losers, dude. Jesus.
Season one broke a ton of records for Amazon for being like the most binged in a single weekend show in history. And like it was definitely one of the most successful Amazon originals they've put out. So I totally understand them wanting to, it's not just milk it. It's like, you know, kind of treat this thing with a bit more panache and like respect to like make sure that it can turn into something that's sustainable.
Otherwise, Tim, it's done in a week.
Yeah,
like we move on to something else and it's forgotten about and suddenly nobody cares about the boys after like a week and a half. Like I don't want that.
And that's what happened, Andy, like specifically with you, like having you on the show, I think is really cool because, you know, last year when Boys season one came out, we all binged it in like a weekend and we're all high on it and talking about it. It was all we could talk about. And then that conversation just stopped. You didn't watch it, you know, and then you haven't thought about the boys until season two was ramping up. And then you finally watched season one for the first time.
Yeah.
I think it's also possible that they have nothing else coming. So they're probably like, hey, why don't we need to pad this out. Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, there was production shutdowns and things like that. So I don't know where they're at, Joy, with the Marvelous Miss Maisel season 19 or wherever on. But that shit can't come.
Invincible.
I think it's season 4. Yeah.
The Invincible animated series is coming, right?
It's still slated for 2020. As of two weeks ago, they're still saying that it's coming this year.
I imagine that's a little bit easier to produce because you could do animated a little bit more easily remotely, but that's cool. And the cast on that is amazing, by the way. They got a lot of great people.
That's so crazy that I think my first day in the studio working on Monday in the studio was when that news was released that Seth Rogen and his group had picked up Invincible as a series and Greg Kratz's freak out on the morning show. That was so long ago.
it's the perfect format for that. But anyway, coming back to the boys, Kevin, what are your thoughts on this season?
I love it. It's not as jarring and as extreme as the first season. Like I feel like things feel more paced out because like the first season was hit after hit of moment of like, oh my god, like they are setting this bar that seems insane to follow. I'm really enjoying it. It certainly has my attention. It's one of those things that like every episode ends and I'm like, oh, I can't wait for next week. It's been a lot of fun. And yeah, every week I'm more excited for the way the season's going to go.
Copy that. Tim, what about you?
Just last statement on Invincible real quick. It's like the with that and Boys, both are Seth Rogen produced. So it's
and
like
Preacher. I think he brought Preacher as well to the screen back then. So he's been on that Garth Ennis train for a while.
But in relation to Amazon Originals with like with what they're giving that team, those teams to push this, if Invincible is anywhere near as good as what The Boys is, we're in for something real special because going to The Boys now, it's like, I am so blown away with what this show is. It's not often we talk about what something could be. And I think The Boys is the rare exception where we're never questioning like, oh, the budget's not good or oh, the effects aren't good, whatever. It's like the story's so good that none of that shit matters. And they use all of those things at the right moments that just enhance the story and characters and make it so cool. Season one was such a surprise to me where, like Kevin was saying, it's just hit after hit of, oh, fuck, they're doing this. They're going there. Cool. Right. And you're constantly surprised at what's happening. And I've very rarely watched a show where I have no idea where the end of this season's going to be. Like, at any moment, things could totally take a left turn, but I'm here for the ride. And season two, I'm actually enjoying even more than season one, only with the context of season one having happened. I just love that they are taking time to focus on characters, to have these relationships really grow. It's a much slower season, but that doesn't mean things aren't happening.
Yeah, that's not... Sorry, really quick, just to add... There are still big things that are catching me off guard and me being like, I cannot believe they did that. I thought the boat was going to do something else, you know?
Yeah, totally, totally.
We're going to get to the boat stuff in a second because that's my absolute favorite episode. It's got a great moment. I tweeted about when we got a chance to see those first three episodes earlier. But I'm with Tim on this one, right, where I think the strength of the show is the characters. And the budget is just good enough to not take you out of the reality of it. I actually think that most of the effects look pretty great, especially flying stuff. And they do a lot of flying stuff, which usually can be cheesy. Specifically with some of the Stormfront stuff when she comes in sort of like Storm with like the electrical things. I'm like, that it looks great. And they do a lot of good practical lighting and stuff like that too. But what really gets me is that they do a great job at really putting you in these characters' mindsets and like what motivates them. And specifically Homelander, I find to be just the most fascinating and terrifying character in this whole thing, because he just is a child the entire time. And it's so terrifying scary. To watch. Like we'll get into some spoilers in a couple seconds, but there are scenes in this where you're like, oh my God, that is so fucking twisted what he's doing right now. And you just get so instantly scared because they're set up so wonderfully. And then of course, you know, the Huey and Butcher relationship and how all those relationships get strengthened. It's really, really great. Also, we finally, well, that's a spoiler. We won't go into spoilers just yet. Actually, let's go into spoilers right
just
now.
Just cast Anthony Starr in everything, man.
Like, he was, dude, he's terrifying. He's so terrifying. So let's go into spoilers real quick. The moment that I'm talking about with him, I think happens in like episode 2 or 3, where he goes to his little cabin and we see we see Madeline Steelwell there, and you're like, oh, they brought back Elizabeth Shue. That's weird, but it's not her. It's the guy that can like change into her.
Doppelganger.
And it's so fucking creepy. Oh,
it's
my God.
Horrifying. It is horrifying. Is this guy doing this against his will? Like, I mean, obviously he is, but is it?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like how okay is he with this?
Not okay at all. I'm pretty sure he's being held there against his will. I'm pretty sure that he's just being used as a plaything, and then he's obviously meets his ultimate demise, I think, in the 5th episode. Fourth episode, yeah. Then there's also the Gecko character, which I was like, well, that's just fucking fucked up. The guy that lets people cut parts of his body off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that he
Who does that, they can, as like, a side business.
It's just a thing.
Kevin, it reminds me of I mentioned this because I was doing watch alongs on my stream, and I told everybody that it reminded me of when people pay money to go to the rooms to break stuff.
Yeah.
Or you could just get a hammer and like you could just break vases and TVs and stuff. That's what it reminds you of, where it's like he's charging for a service because that's, you know, it's form release. Of catharsis. Yeah.
Ooh, at the end where he's like, oh, you can cut my dick off for an extra like 500.
Yeah. And the guy's like, all right,
where's the nearest ATM?
The thing I enjoy about the show the most is how it takes two of my favorite things, Game of Thrones and superheroes, turns them both on their heads and mashes them together as an Amazon original show that somehow just works so well. And I think it's because from the beginning, they focus on the villains just as much as they focus on the heroes. And there's always kind of like that weird question of like, who is what? And with Homelander, I don't understand how they Jaime Lannistered him in a season and a half. And like Game of Thrones took so many more, right? Like, we care about him as a villain. We're scared of him, and he is utterly fucking terrifying. But then all of a sudden there's Stormfront, and she quickly turns from being like super like interesting and likable to being debatably worse than Homelander in an instant.
Yeah.
And the moment that happens, it's not like she changes the way she is or her character or her acting or anything. It's just a little bit more context to who she is. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit. And the dynamic between Stormfront and Homelander in this is something that I didn't think could be achieved with the boys above season one. And that's why so far I'm enjoying season two so much more, is that somehow they're still surprising me with character development. And with the show going in directions I didn't expect, where I would say specifically with the last like 3 episodes that we've watched so far, there's about 4 or 5 times without looking at the play bar of how much I have left where I'm like, oh, fuck, the credits are about to come up here. And I love that it never feels like they do. Like, these episodes are long and filled with a lot of really good stuff. And unlike any other show or movie I've ever watched, I'm not like waiting for it to end.
I keep saying that nothing feels wasted. And even though there are arcs, you know, the Deep's arc has taken a while, right? And he's a piece of shit. And he's as I'm watching, I'm like, how do you try to rehabilitate this image? How do you try to make him a likable character? And they're not. They're just going a way different direction with it. But it's still entertaining. And you don't feel bored with it. Like, I'm still, even though the Deep's story is like the D plot, right, at this point, because there's so many different moving parts, I still give a shit about what he's doing because I know that there's something fucked up going to happen with it, and something really fucked up tied to all of it.
One thing that's crazy is it feels like it ended when he brought this giant whale and like failed again, like the Deep does. And now they've introduced the whole, like, oh, he's getting married. And then it's like, oh, and there's a little bit more. Here's a...
The collective.
Yeah, well, here's the Amazonian lady in the episode 5. What's her name?
Maeve.
That's it. Maeve.
Making a deal with them, right?
Yeah, making some sort of deal. And it's like,
so cool.
Yep. We don't know what for yet, and that's going to be cool. Yeah, I mean, I think that the only storyline that I think drags a little bit that I'm kind of tired of and I'm kind of glad that it's wrapping up is Frenchie and Kimiko. Mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, just get stop. Like, stop trying to help this person. She doesn't want your help. It's getting old at a certain point, but it comes to a head, and that's fine. But everything else I really like. I like the Mother's Milk character. I like the dynamic between Mother's Milk, Butcher, and Huey, and how they're all sort of like...
Such a weird name.
Shout out to DJ Kenta for getting me a cameo from Laz as Mother's Milk. It was great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Laz just talking, be like, "What up, Annie? Thanks for doing the watch alongs." It's like,
that's so funny.
Dope.
Yeah, I've just been really, really happy with this show so far. I think the last episode, we're in spoiler territory, right?
We are in spoiler territory.
Yeah. Okay, like the last episode, episode 5, when we start to see the relationship turn between Homelander and Stormfront, I was enjoying it a lot. It's still entertaining. It's still like fun to watch, and it's like, oh my god, what's going to happen next? But I was really loving the direction of pitting them against each other, and seeing their personalities collide until you started to see her kind of say, "Oh, I've got my meme guy making memes for you now, Homelander." Like he's helping you out. And then that's when it's sort of, you know, the light bulb flashes. It's like, oh, I could really use this help. And then we start to see that really weird fucking sex scene between both of them.
I love it.
And it's
floating so in the middle of the room.
It's entertaining as hell. I was just really loving the direction of seeing like, oh, what's going to happen when they go at each other. Yeah. And they actually went at each other in a different way.
But I feel like
I think they will.
Quick piece of trivia real quick for episode of Stormfront. In the original Garth Ennis comic book, Stormfront is a man. He can fly and manipulate weather and electricity and is nearly as powerful as Homelander. But I think that switching that character over to female is interesting because it changes the dynamic also. Mm-hmm. But that character starts off, you hate her from the beginning because she is just that annoying, and this is no disrespect to millennials, but like the millennial stereotype of like always on her phone and like doesn't care about institutions or anything.
I loved her.
And then you start hating her even more because she just starts subtly throwing in some not so subtle racism, and you're like, wait a minute, are you just a fucking blaring racist? And then, man, it just progresses worse and worse.
And then you find out
there
that she's like weirdly Liberty. Old. Yeah, she she's was Liberty at some point, and it's like...
And just randomly murders people. Dude, with the part where she's got the kid, Kimiko's brother, yep. And she goes, open your eyes. I like to see the light go out. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. You're off. And like,
I messed up.
At first, you're kind of rooting for her because it feels like she's going to drive the wedge into the Seven and really fuck up all their shit, right? And the Seven's going to be ruined, and there's going to be an infighting, and then Vought's going to be destroyed. And because she's the one, even though she's a part of the Seven, she's always, you know, campaigning in the streets and saying like, look, they're lying to you. Vought's lying to you. The Seven, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you're kind of feeling like, oh, fuck yeah, she's really like blowing the lid off this stuff. And then she calls the Kimiko's brother a yellow bastard. It's like, oh fuck, oh, this is, and like she's actually super racist.
She also kills a bunch of people. Like, you can tell that she doesn't care about human life when she's running around in the apartment building just
murdering
where everyone. She like stops chasing and will just murder people, and it's like,
yeah, the dude got zapped and like hit his head against a refrigerator. I forgot what the hell happened, but yeah, you start to see, oh, she's actually really, really fucked up. And then it becomes kind of obvious that Homelander is the nationalist, and she is just the straight up racist. Like, Homelander is like all about America. If you're not American, I don't fuck with you. And she's just like, if you're not white, I don't fuck with you. And yeah, it's really crazy.
It's pretty intense. Dialing it back a little bit, guys, real quick, just going through quickly the episode guide. We have The Big Ride, which is episode 1, which kicks off with Butcher still missing. Huey, Mother's Milk, Frenchie, and Kimiko are now fugitives, and Homelander and Vought are more powerful than ever. But just as the boys are about to leave the country, they are pulled back into the fray. One of the things that, just going on this, one of the things that I thought is so good about the show, and specifically this episode, is it starts hopeless. Like, we have lost. This is not good. We're living in the basement. We're dealing with these gangsters. And then they figure out, I forget, what is it? They figure out that piece of intel that they take to the CIA operative. And then her head explodes.
Oh, my God.
It just explodes. And you're like,
mid conversation,
how can they drive these characters more and more into just the depths of despair? And that thing just explodes. And we still don't have a resolution for why that's happening yet, as of episode 5. But I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Do we
just
think
like,
that
guys,
it was like an implant, or is someone did someone
no.
somehow?
I think I think like a ESP. Is that the...
No.
What's ESP? ESP is where when you can hear people's thoughts,
yeah,
or you can see other places.
What am I thinking?
Telekinetic energy,
yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know anything about that, guys, but I do know about our amazing sponsors.
Wow,
the first of which is Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. We've all had friends. I've had multiple family members that could have used services like this because they got in way too deep with credit cards. You've heard Greg Miller talk about how much he could have used this when he first moved to San Francisco and got into a ton of debt. Definitely a service worth checking out if you are worried about your debt right now. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score, and when assessing your credit worthiness, they actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept their rate. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day, over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards and meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Here's how you take advantage of it. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/morning to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/morning. Next up, we got HelloFresh. Man, we've been talking about HelloFresh for a while because we love it. And Tim and Gia use it all the time. Get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. HelloFresh offers delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make with simple steps and pictures to guide you along the way. There's something for everyone, including low-calorie, vegetarian, and kid-friendly recipes. Since they offset their operations, travel, and shipping emissions, HelloFresh's carbon footprint is 25% lower than store-bought grocery-made meals. That's pretty cool. The source is the University of Michigan on that. Keep your fridge stocked by adding extra proteins or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. And here's some fun stuff. HelloFresh is committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever and has taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe, including contactless delivery, tamper-proof packaging, and team member wellness checks. HelloFresh donated over 2.5 million meals to charity in 2019, and this year they're stepping up food donations to local communities amid the coronavirus crisis. You guys have heard us talk about this a lot because Tim loves the fact that Gia loves HelloFresh because she cooks for them all the time, and he's right now very excited because she's going to cook for him some firecracker meatballs with roasted
spicy meatballs.
Beans, and that scared me. And Jasmine Rice, that's how excited he is. He just came out of nowhere. I got a bunch of screens in front of me, and I'm looking at these meatballs right now, thinking, man, one day Tim will invite me over for dinner.
But I just want Tim to yell in my ear, spicy meatballs.
Spicy meatballs. Here's how you take advantage of this great offer. Go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use the code 80morning to get a total of $80 off your first month, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/80morning and use the code 80morning to get a total of $80 off your first month, including free shipping. Lastly, we got our good friends over at ExpressVPN. Listen, there are a ton of VPN providers out there. You've probably heard of a couple of them, and some you may have even used, some of you may have even used a VPN before, but we like to do our research here, kind of funny, on our sponsors. We only recommend brands that our listeners that we believe in, and we believe in ExpressVPN because it is the best VPN on the market. Here's why. ExpressVPN doesn't log your data. There's lots of really cheap and free VPNs that make money by selling your data to ad companies. ExpressVPN developed a technology called Trusted Server that makes it impossible for their servers to log any of your info. Second is speed. We've tried a lot of VPNs in the past. Many slow your connection down or make your device sluggish. I've been using ExpressVPN for a while, and my internet speeds are blazing fast. Even when we connect to servers thousands of miles away, I can still stream HD quality videos with zero lag. The last thing that really sets ExpressVPN apart from other VPNs is how easy it is to use. Unlike other VPNs, you don't have to input or program anything. You just fire up the app and click one button to connect. It's so easy, even your grandparents could you do it. And it's not just me saying this. Wired, The Verge, CNET, and other tech company experts rate ExpressVPN the number one VPN in the world. So protect yourself with the VPN that we use and trust. Use my link, expressvpn.com/morning today, and get an extra 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/morning. Visit expressvpn.com/morning to learn more. Now back to the boys.
All something right, so that I appreciate so much about this show, both season one and now especially season two, is when we did Kevin Smith in review, we went through all the different movies ending with Bill and Jane Silent Bob, Phil, Jane Silent Bob reboot, and you know, kind of the core of that movie. Ted. Yeah, Bill and Silent Ted. The whole core of that movie was the idea and concept of what a reboot looks like in 2020, and like, oh, there has to be like representation of this, this, and this, and all that stuff, and like all of that was played for jokes, but really it was not much of a joke. It was kind of just here is what it is. You know, there wasn't much commentary there. It's like this is what this would be. The Boys takes it so much further, and it reminds me a lot of South Park in the way that I am so impressed that a show that is this nuanced can, and with so many characters and so much going on and such a kind of understood language that superheroes are to us now. Like, we are so aware of universes and teams and all this stuff that, like, they can get away with an actual message. And the message that they have feels very South Park in the sense that it's talking about stuff going on right now. You know, it's like dealing with people getting canceled and having to, like, how do they come back from that? And not just in one way, in multiple ways, whether it's The Deep or Homelander. And, you know, having Stormfront's character be this extremely
bot, right? But also,
100%
in trouble, and they figure out a way. And shout out to Giancarlo Esposito, who's just like forever the best calm bad guy. He's always going to be that guy. He's so good.
It's so good. And just the way that they can put him against Homelander in a way that at any given moment you're rooting for the one or the other, and that can just flipped based on who's the star of that scene. That's so great. But I feel like even getting into the Maeve storyline they currently have going on, and how the you know, LGBT representation is being handled is so masterful, in my opinion, of what I'm experiencing from it, where it's like they're hitting the actual realness of it, where it's like, hey, cool, this representation matters, but representation done properly matters. And having these like Hollywood execs come in and the corporatized stuff, it's like, I love that they're showing so many different angles to it, and the way that all the different characters are kind of reacting to it. Like the fact that this season focuses on the Dawn of the Seven movie being made as they're going through, and having them behind the scenes dealing with their real world issues and kind of treating like the whole A-Train storyline is awesome.
Great.
And I didn't think I'd ever care about A-Train again after season one. You know, it's like the fact that even he has a relevant storyline that's building into all this stuff. It's like, that's what makes the show truly special to me, and why I think season two is as strong as it is it's allowing itself to go deeper while still adding even more flashy, crazy moments that make us go, holy shit, that's shocking.
Yeah, and I think there's one line that really just showed me how self-aware they are and how smart the writing is when douchey movie director is sort of pitching them on the idea of the Dawn of the Seven, and there's a moment where I think something is pitched to where one of the woman characters, I don't know if it was Starlight or Maeve, one of them has to wear something really skimpy, and one of them sort of says like, hey, that's really, really sexist. I'm not sure if it was about what they were wearing or what they were doing, but
I think it was Starfront being like, hey, isn't this written by like
Starlight?
Stormfront. Oh, Starfront.
Starlight
or
Stormfront.
Yeah. She didn't say the thing about like you write men women terribly, and he was like, I have two sisters or something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the perfect line, because that is like such the quintessential thing that, you know, people will jump to when they are accused of being sexist, and they'll say, look, I have a daughter, dude. I would, you know, like whenever somebody is accused of, you know, sexual assault or something, or, and they'd be like, I could never do this. That's not me. I have a daughter. And that's always the thing they jump to. And the fact that they pushed that into this script, it's like, I heard that. I was like, this is fucking genius, dude. Like, I just love all of, I love all the writing. I love how self-aware it is.
How about the just the concept of the brand Girls Get It Done, where it's just so immediately you cringe at it, and then it just gets more and more corrupted as the as the thing goes. Similar to like how Starlight, and I like her character transition here too, because she's starting to find her sort of true identity, and we get some back and forth between her and her mother as well as to like how, you know, they're interested, but she's also becoming more cunning, and she's already kind of figured out a way to blackmail people to get out of having the ramifications of having leaked Compound V. But you know, we have her with A-Train being like, hey, I forgot. Oh, she's like, oh, you killed your, you know, I know that you killed your ex-girlfriend. Like, if that comes out, you're finished. So he's like, he leaves her alone. And then of course, when Stormfront confronts her and is like, hey, what's going on? She's like, I know your liberty. I know who you are. Like, that's going to ruin you too. So she keeps getting out of these issues while digging herself deeper and deeper into it with all of these enemies. I think this is a wonderful place to put your character from a conflict standpoint, but it's terrifying every time she walks into a room, and you really feel that. You feel the pressure of what it is to be her and like dealing with all these things while still having to be embedded into this group.
Dude, Stormfront to me is so impressive of a character and so well written, because Kevin and Andy, what you guys were talking about that line and the I have a sister, or I have sisters and all that stuff, it's like, I love that Stormfront 98% of the time that we've seen so far, I'm sure this is about to change dramatically, but 98% of the time what we've seen so far is everything that she says is kind of stuff that we'd be like, I'm with you. You know what I mean? It's like she's kind of speaking for the audience of like being on the right side of things or handling situations the right way. And then there's just that twist of like, oh, fuck no, you're actually the most evil of any of them. Yeah. And like, I think that is such interesting character, where earlier I was talking about Jaime Lannister, and it's like, it's kind of Jaime Lannister mixed with Tyrion Lannister, where it's like you're with them all the way, but then every once in a while like, oh fuck that though, no. Well,
no, see, for me, I think the character is set up so beautifully because she comes in as the disruptor, right? And you're like, oh, finally someone's in a position of power in this organization to really pull the curtain back and show how horrible and how corporatized and how just productized everything is at this company. And they don't really give a shit about, oh no, she's going to use it to her advantage and like do something insidious. We don't know what yet, but she's basically trying to just gain control of this group. And she's doing it the way, you know, to mirror like the election frauds and like the Russian hackers and all these things. She's realized that the power of the internet, and there's that great scene where she talks to him. She's like, you want everyone to love you, but you don't realize that time is done. You don't need 50 million people to love you. You need 5 million people who are pissed off. And she's like, you have fans. I have soldiers. And that's such a powerful line for me, because I'm like, that is exactly what people are doing right now. They're like radicalizing followings to try and do whatever, you know, help them do whatever political ends they're at right now. And to me, that's super scary, because not knowing, she has that other line. She goes, she will know this works when it winds up on your uncle's Facebook page. And that's just so, it's like that creepy, chilling, horrible, chilling thing that the internet can do, because you're not sure what's true and what's not true.
Are we going to go through episode by episode?
We're getting there on time, but we can go through a couple of them just real quick. We did episode one. Episode two kicks off Butcher's back with the boys. The tensions flare with Huey. Homelander spends quality time with his new family. We should talk about this as well. Yeah. Starlight and Stormfront bond at a press junket, and the boys hunt down a super terrorist with a startling identity.
God, how so this crazy is where we get introduced
to him in that relationship with the kid, which is so fucked up.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's so crazy that we've gone this long talking about season two and not brought up
the biggest thing
that, like, that ended season one, where it was like, oh shit, Homelander has a kid and it's Butcher's wife.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
no,
it's, the kid isn't.
And he's a scoop.
Butcher's wife's kid. We know what you mean. Butcher's stepkid. This whole relationship, and this is another one of those like terrifying things, right? As we pull back and we see the compound she's living in, which is pretty much just there to keep her in, and she has this weird like doll life in this thing where she's just trying to but they do such a good job at showing the differences between this character, the kid, and Homelander. And if you remember from season one, we saw how Homelander was brought up. He was brought up in the sterile, cold environment with doctors. We even get some stuff from the doctors in that, where that raised him. He was like, I totally fucked up. Like, I didn't realize how much a lack of love and empathy for a child, what that would do to them later and essentially turn them into a psychopath. And so when she gets to a point, I think in episode 4 or 5, where she's like, I can't leave this kid. You really feel it because you're like, if she does, A, she'd be abandoning her child, which is a horrible thing. B, she's also basically just dooming this kid to being Homelander 2.0 when he grows up, just being a psychopath who goes around killing whoever he wants. And then, of course, this is also the episode where they introduce Kimiko's brother, and she goes in and she like murks all those ex terrorists and then hugs the brother. And you're like, OK, well, this is super scary. A quick little piece of trivia on this. This is the point where the gills, where the deep gets high and talks to his gills. And the gills are voiced by Patton Oswalt.
Apparently. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And I also have a bunch of little tiny things of feedback. But Billy Joel music plays a huge part in pretty much every one of these episodes. Let's see. In this one, the song You're Only Human. And Huey sings along as his phone with Butcher returns to his meeting. So this is where Butcher kind of comes back to the group. And I like specifically how they handled Butcher's character in this, because he wakes up in the middle of a parking lot and then just runs across the street and like asks for paper at a Tony Romo's or whatever the fictitious thing is, and starts writing it down, and then sees himself up on the screen as a terrorist. And he's like, fuck, my life is fucked right now. Don't have any other ones. Don't even have the trip for that. Episode 3, going into that, unless you guys want to talk about anything from episode 2. Over the Hill with Swords of 1,000 Men is what this is called. The boys take to the high seas to safeguard their prisoner. This is where they've already established a relationship with the ex-CIA agent who's now helping them out. And she says, if you get this prisoner to us, this terrorist that has snuck in, then I'll get you guys off the hook for everything. And then, of course, that goes horribly, horribly wrong. And this is my favorite scene in the series so far, because in order for the deep to redeem himself, he puts a whale on the beach, and then you have that wonderful moment where Butcher just looks at it, and then he just increases the throttle on the boat, and everyone's like, what the fuck is going on? And then it cuts to Huey just in the stomach of the whale, and they're like, we gotta go. And he goes, you know what, you guys just go ahead and go without me, I'm good, I'm just gonna hang out here for a little bit. It's terrifying.
Right next to its giant whale heart beating.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Still beating.
I am so glad I didn't watch the trailer, because this was spoiled in the trailer apparently. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people in my chat room were like, oh, I'm so glad he didn't watch it, because it was so shocking to me. And again, it just shows that this show doesn't give a shit about what it's doing. It's just gonna always kind of like try to surprise you and make you laugh and have you say holy shit a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But also just kind of a weird scene, because the deep just kind of disappeared for a while, and I don't know where he went. And then
they all back a little bit here and there. They were like, the character from Friends was like, hey, now's your chance. This is what's happening. You need to get out there and like prove that you're
after. No. I mean, they escape into the sewers, and the deep kind of like reappears talk to the seven.
I think knocked out, or like knocked down.
He did.
When
he got thrown back, when
he was on the whale. The whale wasn't beached. It was right next to the beach, and it was hit with such force that it slid onto the beach.
It was a little too convenient for me. I was like, where's the deep during all this when they're having their conversations? And then finally, Mother's Milk is like, all right, I'll wait in here with you. And then Huey's like, okay, fuck, let's go. And he's like, good. Yeah, let's go.
this was the episode for me where last season, I would say it was like towards the 5 through 7 area where we really got into the female storyline, and I got a little bit confused about who was doing what at certain moments, just because there's so many. It's like normal shows have A plot, B plot, C plot. This one I feel like goes all the way down to J at all times. And this was the episode this season where I was kind of like, for a minute, I'm like, all right, so now they're in the sewers. And at the moment where Starlight was like against Huey because of Homelander, I was like, I don't exactly remember why they're broken up. And it's like, then I remembered bits of it, but all of it just started like feeling like too much was going on, where after this episode it was cleared up for me, but I just felt like what the boys themselves, like their plot seemed so not as important as everything else going on, mm-hmm. that when they kind of collided with the seven in this, it was just a little jarring for me.
Just in case you guys are wondering, a little piece of trivia here. The production didn't actually beach a whale. No shit. That thing is actually a giant prosthetic that features 5 puppet operators to create its movement.
Fuck yeah.
I'll never forget. There's a moment where after that scene cuts and it comes back to the whale with the little speedboat embedded in its belly, you can still hear the whale like it's still in its death throes. Man, they really did a good job of that. I do want to give a shout out to episode one as well, where it starts off with that cool montage where everything's happening. We're also seeing Black Noir go after the terrorists in like the Middle East, and then he rips one of the dude's like head just open.
Oh man,
that was a shocking. I mean, horrible last night's episode,
the fucking defacing of the dude.
Yeah. Oh man,
yeah, this show constantly. It's like it's the perfect show to just like. It's hard for me to watch it while I am trying to be quiet. Like, I can't watch it at night. I have to watch it during the daytime so that I could go, oh, fuck. Like, because it requires a lot of that.
Episode four, of course, is titled Nothing Like It in the World. And this is where Mike Hugh and Annie go out and find out about Liberty. Frenchie still has a relationship problems with Kimiko, which I just don't like at all. And then Homelander continues to unravel. And I believe he gets accused of being a war criminal in this one because he just randomly murked. He shot someone with lasers, and the guy behind him was a random civilian and got killed.
I think that was episode five.
What's up?
That was last night.
The war criminal.
Was that?
Stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize. Five. He's unraveling in episode four. Episode five is that, and then in episode five he goes, and we haven't even talked about the character who is the congressperson, the congresswoman, who's trying to basically pull the curtain aside on Voight, but then she has that terrifying moment where she's giving a rally, and he just comes down and lands beside her, and then he makes it infinitesimally worse for himself. Yeah. And we cut back to the handler character, and she's just literally pulling her hair up, and it's just like falling out because this guy just does not freaking get it.
What happened in episode four?
Episode four is where they go to find they go on the road trip, and that's where like
for Liberty
they kind of bond. Oh, and then they have that moment where they walk out of the diner and a car hits another car, and she goes, I have to go save him. And he goes, you can't do that right now. Like, they're gonna know who you are. We gotta go. We're flying low.
They bang.
Yeah. They do bang. Yeah. Bang. A lot of banging happens.
Yeah.
Was that also the episode where
Billy and his wife get back together?
That is the episode, I believe, where Billy is trying to get her out of there, and she decides not to go.
Yeah.
Because the next episode is when he quit. He's like, screw it, I quit. And he goes to visit his aunt and get his dog. And then Billy or Huey and Mother's Milk go and get him. And then they have that terrifying moment where he gets in his car and like looks for a second and then looks back in his rearview mirror and Black Noir is just on the roof of the thing. I don't know what their plan was to call him the gas. I thought they were just going to escape with that, but I guess they wanted to wait until nighttime to let this thing kill them.
I think that they were prepping, right? They were setting up, making all those bombs.
Oh, making all the bombs and stuff. Yeah.
But really Black Noir in the background, just chilling.
He's the creepiest character in this whole thing. Like in the very beginning, when he walks out with the kid's dad's head and looks over and the kid's on his bed and he takes his little teddy bear and like shakes it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just puts it down in the bed.
He's really, really unsettling.
Yeah. Very unsettling.
But yeah, the idea that whole sequence was honestly like just kind of scared when they are hiding underneath, when they are in the basement and they're hearing the explosions, which I'm assuming he's throwing in like gas grenades in there or he's throwing in.
No, I mean, that was their own shit.
No, wait, upstairs, they made makeshift tripwires.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
And
they
try to stop him, but I guess he like regenerates like.
That's right. They were kind of home alone-ing it
down there. And it's cool because they have a little moment, a little bit of blocking that I thought was clever because these guys know what the hell they're doing. Someone threw a smoke grenade, someone threw a pillow over it.
So it didn't disperse
really quickly. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then, of course, they go upstairs. And it's interesting. I watched this episode twice because I was able to watch some of these episodes early. Didn't catch that he wanted them to leave. So cool. Because he wanted to make that deal with Black Noir and not have them hear that the kid exists. But they came back in. And so at first I was like, oh, he's telling them to get the fuck out because he thinks they're going to die. It wasn't that. I think he was telling them to get out because he was about to make that deal with Vought. And he didn't want them to hear that he had a kid or his wife is alive and stayed because she's guarding the kid. Because he tells them that she's waiting for me down the road. And they're like, she's not really waiting for you. He's like, nah, she stayed home with Homelander's kid. This is the worst situation ever. Yeah. But I love how that scene played out too. He gives him the phone and he goes, okay, put Black Noir back on and then he just drops him and walks away.
It's
terrifying. It's
extremely terrifying how Black Noir just seems like he's got the little camera on his chest and seems to just do exactly what he's told, you know?
Yeah, he's such a machine. He's like. It feels like there isn't a whole lot of feeling there, and obviously that's what they're going for. But I just love that he is straight up assassin. Like I am the weapon. I am, you know, whatever happens, I am the person who's like trying to kill what's his face, Butcher.
Well, what's cool about it is we never see his face and we never hear him. He never says anything. And it's like that commitment to that character is awesome.
It's just funny that he comes like in what was it, the second episode, or he goes to that woman and he's like that, like handles all the
security
stuff.
Camera.
Yeah, the security camera. And he just hands her a note that's like written in crayon and it just says butcher. And it's like, what is wrong with, like, what's the deal here?
Well, what I love about the character, which makes him especially terrifying for me, is you guys, I don't know if you remember this at all or how big a fan you were of G.I. Joe growing up, but there was a character called Snake Eyes that was this character. He was like a ninja. He never talked. You never saw his face, but he was a force for good. And the fact that they've sort of taken that and corrupted it and made it into this like childish, weird, unstoppable, scary creature, it just makes it that much more terrifying for me.
Yeah.
We also had the Vought reveal in episode 3, right? Where the news goes out and
Compound V finally going out, and
everybody
then of course
knows, and we have the scene where he's in the hallway just crying, or at least it looks like he's crying in his helmet, and it's just like he's terrifying. He is very, very scary.
Of course, I love the scene when they're all the PR people are in the room and they're like, we got two ways we can go. We can deny or we can mea culpa. And then Giancarlo Esposito just smiles and he's like, oh, I know who to lay this off on. And then the next scene they cut and he's laying it off on Madeline Steelwell. He's like, we didn't know this was happening. This was led by her. And you're like, oh, he's going to get away scot-free. He's terrifying.
And now she's dead. Yeah.
And now she's gone. So it's the perfect scapegoat.
It's so good. And then at the end of episode 5, we get the infamous line of, quit being a fucking pussy, laser my fucking tits.
Yeah,
we do. Yes,
we do get that.
Which was what a line, and a crazy sort of connection, all because of the fact that, you know, obviously Homelander has this big issue with Stormfront, her kind of disrupting things, her coming in here and thinking that she's going to sort of become the boss, and Homelander being like, I'm in charge, like the seven are fucking mine, you know. So there's that great sort of opposition right there, and then they end up banging in a very violent way, and they're breaking all sorts of shit and they're punching each other, and it is intense.
Cool as hell, man. I was all about it.
As hell, ladies and gentlemen, next week.
Wait, real quick, one shot from that we didn't talk about yet that I thought was like insanely cool for it being the boy
killing the people.
Homelander. When he comes, dude, I know this show is successful because I was like, holy shit, is he really about to kill these people? And then when he fucking does it, I was like, what is this show doing? And then when it like cuts and he didn't actually do it, it was a moment where I'm like, thank God, because like I don't know if that direction could work.
Yeah,
like, what do you do? And it's like, it's just so brilliant where it's like this show uses shock to such great extent that it doesn't feel cheap. It feels earned, so that when they do a shocking moment like that and take it back immediately, I'm not like, ah, fuck you. I'm like, thank God, you know, cool.
It was intense. Yeah. The feeling that you start to see in his eyes. And then there's that, the man from the army in the front row, flicking them off. And it's like, oh my God, he's going to do something. And then the eyes burn off and you just see the top down view was just so intense to just see people getting mowed down. Like the laser just
out like 100 people at once.
Dude, it was so fucking intense. I felt awful. My body was hurting. My chest was hurting. And then it just cuts back and it's like, oh God. Like I had the same feeling, Tim. We're like, how do you recover from this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I was like, keep doing the great work, guys. You guys are the real heroes.
And then there's also that great scene of him watching the footage and crying and having a little freak out. And he's just so good. Like I love Homelander so much because he's such a piece of shit. Like he's one of the most entertaining characters I've ever seen on TV. Whenever I think season one, I liked him a lot more because the evil was a little bit less present, even though he was letting a whole airplane of people die and getting like what an incredible sequence that was. But it's the chumminess. It's the anytime he would talk and there's a smile and he's saying something terrible. And I would just smile and be like, he's such a piece of shit. And I love this guy. Like he's such a terrible person, but so entertaining to watch. Like Anthony Starr is, I couldn't tell that he wasn't American, by the way. Great accent.
Was he not?
Yeah. He's Kiwi. He's from there's New Zealand. Kiwi. Yeah.
That was great.
But seeing him this season kind of break down in every aspect, like not just like, oh, we're seeing him cry, but when he's doing the press conference that he shouldn't be doing and he's standing in front of a lot of people with a mic and he's just like, oh, well, I had to do it and whatever. They're like, oh, so wait, you've done it before? He's like, oh, well, and he's like stumbling
he's like,
through.
These things just happen sometimes. Wait, this has happened before? How many times has this happened before?
Oh, it's just so great to like to see him get his comeuppance in a way that doesn't just feel like, oh, someone punched him harder. Well, it's
he's destroying himself, and it's in every different avenue. Where in like the beginning of the season, we saw him go up against the new head of Vought, and he got taken down so hard.
Totally.
Yeah, we saw him go up to Stormfront, and she was smarter about it because there is it is of like who's stronger. And she had that moment where she was like, hey, I'm just messing around. Like,
yeah, I can tell that I've pushed you a little too far. Yeah. Let's back this up a little bit. Yeah, that's smart for her. All right, ladies and gentlemen, next week, of course, we are going to do a full review of The Blood Doors Off, I guess is the name of season 2, episode 6 of The Boys. But before we conclude this episode.
Blowing the doors off, right?
No, the bloody doors off. Oh, the bloody doors off is how that. That's what it looks like. I don't know. You guys can take a look. I might be wrong. We go now is episode 5, The Bloody Doors Off, but it's not possessive. I don't know. It doesn't matter, ladies and gentlemen, because what does matter is you, the Patreon producers out there and supporters out there. You guys remember, if you want to back this show at the $5 above level, you want to back us at the $5 above level, it gives you the opportunity to be a part of our shows. Just like Matt Bowers did, he says, The Boys continues to be one of my favorite shows running right now. Its ability to be hilarious and dark and hyper-violent all at the same time is truly fantastic. The scene at the end of episode 5 was just ridiculous gold, and Butcher's one-liners are on another level. He does call people to see you next Tuesday a lot in this, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Grant Burton wrote in and said, so far, season 2 of The Boys has been good, maybe even great. I like how the show continues to push what a superhero comic book TV can be. Show can be. It's not about heroes taking down bad guys. The characters of Homelander is quickly becoming one of the best villains around. He has an intimidating, scary presence whenever he's on screen, and he's a character I love to hate. However, I'm wondering where the things are heading because there isn't much momentum or plot progression so far. I hope the show doesn't start to drag things out, and because of the shopping, crude, gory elements of it, it runs the risk of outstaying its welcome and losing its impact. It gets a thumbs up from me. Well, there you go. Let us know. Watch episode 6 next week, guys, and then write in and let us know what you thought about that and your highlights or things you didn't like, and we'll go over those. Again, that's patreon.com/kindoffunny. Meanwhile, we'll all be back next week to talk about that and some news and some other stuff we've probably been watching as well. But until then, guys, thank you so much for joining me today.
Do you want me to sign off, Nick?
What's up, Tim?
I just want to say that a lot of people are like, oh man, I haven't watched the episode yet because it actually just came out today. Amazon drops their shit way early. Like last night, it was like around 7:50 p.m.
Then it dropped. It was like 5:30 for me.
Oh, then great. Yeah. Like it the day before it comes out. So you have a lot of time to watch stuff. So check early if you're interested.
Cool. Andy, sign off for us.
Shut up, you dumb bud. What bollocks, yeah. I love that. Like the fake movie they're making, it's so good.
That's great.